Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Trump has invited congressional leaders from both parties for another White House meeting Friday on how to end the government shutdown, which is about to enter into a third week. The invitation came after Democratic lawmakers took control of the U.S. House of Representatives, with California's Nancy Pelosi named Speaker of the House for the second time. With one quarter of the U.S. government still in shutdown, the House passed two funding bills, one for Homeland Security, the other for other agencies that are closed. Pelosi said the House will not approve any money for a wall to be built along the U.S.-Mexico border, as Mr. Trump wants.
We are diligent and persistent in trying to open up government.
Any legislation would have to pass the Republican-controlled Senate, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says Democrats continue ignoring what authorities say is necessary for border security.
Let's not waste the time. Let's not get off on the wrong foot with House Democrats using their platform to produce political statements rather than serious solutions.
President Trump has said that he wants more than $5 billion to build the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. Congressional Democrats have said that will not happen. Meanwhile, at the White House, President Trump offered congratulations to Nancy Pelosi for winning the speakership. At the first White House briefing of the new year, the president said he hopes he and Pelosi can work together. The president said he has received a lot of support for a border wall with Mexico.
I have never had so much support as I have in the last week over my stance for border security, for border control, and for, frankly, the wall or the barrier.
Mr. Trump has demanded again more than $5 billion for the wall, as something congressional Democrats say they are not going to pass. Meanwhile, one quarter of the U.S. government remains shut down, with 800,000 federal workers either furloughed or working without being paid. This is VOA News. The Justice Department has launched an investigation into whether United States Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke lied to investigators. The Washington Post reported Thursday that the Justice Department's Public Integrity Section had begun the probe of the Interior Secretary, who left office Wednesday. He told the Associated Press that he had not lied to investigators looking into possible ethics violations and that the report had been leaked by people wanting to smear his legacy. His personal conduct and executive decisions have raised questions about whether he used his position for personal gain, triggering at least 15 investigations, several of which cleared him of wrongdoing. The U.S. ambassador to Moscow has spoken with an American under arrest there on espionage charges. AP correspondent Rita Foley.
Paul Whelan is a corporate security expert who did two tours of duty in Iraq as a Marine. He was given a bad conduct discharge in 2008 after being convicted of larceny. His brother says Whelan had been to Russia several times, so when a fellow former Marine was planning a wedding in Moscow, Whelan went along to help. He was arrested last Friday on espionage charges, though the Russians aren't revealing any details. U.S. Ambassador John Huntsman says he was allowed to meet with Whelan, offered him his help, and later phoned the man's family, but he wouldn't say anything more. Rita Foley, Washington.
Stock markets across the globe dropped Thursday after tech giant Apple said that the sales of its devices had fallen sharply in China last month, perhaps signaling a broader slowing in the world economy. AP's Warren Levinson.
The Dow Jones Industrials shed more than 2.75%, 660 points, the day after Apple announced its fourth quarter disappointment. Apple stock, which had already dropped by a third since hitting record highs this fall, fell nearly 10%. The NASDAQ composite, stuffed with tech issues that feel direct and indirect ripples from the Apple news, dropped more than 3%. The Standard & Poor's 500 fell 2.5%. Apple says it will miss its revenue target for the quarter because iPhone sales have slowed in China. Warren Levinson, New York.
Somalia's UN envoy Thursday urged the United Nations not to interfere in his country's internal affairs, 2 days after the federal government expelled the UN's top official there. The ambassador told a meeting of the UN Security Council that the UN and its representatives have a duty, even an obligation, to respect their mandate and not interfere in the internal affairs and let the Somalis control their own destiny. The Somali federal government declared UN envoy Nicholas Haysom persona non grata on January 1st, ordering him to leave the country just 4 months after he started as the Secretary General's special representative. Find more at voanews.com. I am Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
We'll be right back. Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Somalia accuses the UN of interfering in its internal affairs in the case of a former Al-Shabaab leader.
The member states here will agree the proscribed individuals from Al-Shabaab or other terrorist organizations sanctioned by this very institution cannot assume leadership positions without going through stringent established rehabilitation program.
Abubakar Dahir Osman is Somalia's UN ambassador. Sudan cracks down on opposition and civil society activists. South Sudan's military accuses a rebel group of killing civilians in a village southwest of the capital, Juba. Kenya's government unveils a new education system, and Nigeria's Labour Congress prepares for a strike, even as it meets today with the Labour and Employment Minister.
We are continuing with preparation for the nationwide rally for the 8th of January. After that, we'll prepare for strike as necessary if the government does not send the bill to the National Assembly.
Peter Ozu-Esom is General Secretary of the Nigerian Labour Congress, and the former South African President Jacob Zuma records an album of anti-apartheid songs. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Somalia's UN envoy is urging the United Nations not to interfere in his country's internal affairs, 2 days after the federal government expelled the UN top official there. Viewer's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations on the rare expulsion.
The Somali federal government declared UN envoy Nicholas Haysom persona non grata on January 1st, ordering him to leave the country just 4 months after he took up his post as the UN Secretary General's special representative. The government is upset with Haysom for raising the case of Mukhtar Robo, a former Al-Shabaab leader who has moved into politics and sought to participate in elections in the southwest state. Robo was banned from running by the national election body, but the local one said he could be a candidate. He was arrested last month and violent protests ensued. Somalia's UN ambassador, Abubakar Dahir Osman, told the Security Council Thursday that the UN has a duty not to interfere in Somalia's internal affairs. He also raised Robo's background as a member of Al-Shabaab.
The member states here will agree the proscribed individuals from Al-Shabaab or other terrorist organizations sanctioned by this very institution cannot assume leadership positions without going through a stringent established rehabilitation program.
Haysom did not speak about his expulsion during his remarks to the council, but he did allude to the Robo case, albeit without referencing him by name.
Allegations of interference by the federal government and the violence which erupted following the arrest of one of the candidates, a former Al-Shabaab deputy leader, marred the process and does not bode well for the upcoming electoral processes in other regions or for the 2020 national elections.
Council diplomats said UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is working behind the scenes to try to return Haysom to his post. Haysom, a South African lawyer, is an experienced UN diplomat. He was previously the special envoy for Sudan and South Sudan and was head of the UN mission in Afghanistan, in addition to other high-level posts in the organization. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Nigeria's Labour Congress says it plans to meet today, Friday, with Labour and Employment Minister Senator Chris Ngige in the capital, Abuja, at the invitation of the minister. The Congress says it wants to hear the minister's reaction to its plan to embark on an indefinite nationwide strike aimed at pressuring the federal government to send the agreed minimum wage bill to the National Assembly for consideration and passage. Supporters of the administration say threats of a nationwide strike are meant to reduce President Muhammadu Buhari's popularity ahead of the February elections. Peter Ozu-Esom is the General Secretary of the Nigerian Labour Congress.
This is really not the time for meetings. The time of meetings and discussions have since passed, and a document is with Mr. President. And we expect him to transmit a bill to the National Assembly. Meetings will not change whatever decisions we have reached. We are continuing with preparation for the nationwide rally for the 8th of January. And after that, we will prepare for strike as necessary if the government does not send the bill to the National Assembly.
Some people are expressing concern that this meeting Friday is yet another attempt by the government to prevent a possible strike action. So what are your expectations when you go to this meeting Friday?
Quite honestly, from the history of what has happened recently, we really have no positive expectation about that meeting. And that's why I was saying that for us, this is not the time for meetings. This is the time for government to do what needs to be done, and that is sending a bill to the National Assembly.
Supporters of the ruling party are saying this is fraught with political calculations and that labor unions have not been candid in the negotiations with the issue of threat and ultimatums. You have not been negotiating in good faith.
Our response to that is actually that we are not partisan. We are not interested in the politics they are playing with this matter. They've raised the issue of the timing that is therefore political. But the simple answer to that is that we have been on this issue for over 2 years. It is government that has dilly-dallied to bring it to this time. And therefore, if anybody is playing politics with this matter, it is the government, and they should sort out themselves. As to the argument that we did not negotiate in good faith, I find that very funny, because we tabled a demand for 66,500 naira minimum wage. And it is on the basis of give and take that we painfully agreed to 30,000. And if other parties to the tripartite framework, government, including state governors, are now, after submitting the report, backing away from that amount, they are the ones who have not negotiated in good faith. We will not be blackmailed by any government or political party. We will do those things that are in the interest of our members, no matter which party is involved and no matter which government is involved.
So what's next to resolve this impasse between labor unions and the government? How does this get resolved?
To prevent a nationwide strike, all that government needs to do is to transmit the draft bill to the National Assembly. And the process of lawmaking will engage once the bill is before the National Assembly. All that we have demanded is that government should do that.
Peter Ozo Ison is the General Secretary of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Abuja. Sudanese security forces fired tear gas at demonstrators in a coastal city on Thursday as thousands of people gathered to demand the resignation of President Omar al-Bashir. 22 trade unions and political parties have called for more protests today, Friday, against Mr. Bashir and his government. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Amateur video posted on Twitter showed large crowds of demonstrators in the streets of Port Sudan Thursday chanting slogans against President Bashir and his government. Witnesses said security forces fired tear gas at protesters to try and disperse them. A number of top opposition political figures, including former Prime Minister Sadiq al-Mahdi, who was ousted by Bashir in a military coup nearly 30 years ago, have been calling on the president to step down. The country's top professional unions, including doctors, lawyers, teachers, engineers, and journalists, have called for a nationwide strike on Friday. Popular social media sites remain blocked, although some users appear to be accessing them via virtual private networks. In a nationally televised address Thursday, Bashir defended his record as president, saying that the country's economic crisis was not his fault and that the situation will improve slowly.
He says that Sudan has been under an economic blockade for 21 years and that it is at the top of a list of countries which support terrorism, despite the fact, he claims, that not a single act of terrorism has been registered. No other developing country, he insists, has been under a blockade for so long. Turkey, he says, went into an economic tailspin after just a short period of tension with the United States. Bashir said he empathized with those who were suffering economically and that he was doing everything possible to improve the situation, including by raising the minimum wage, effective this month. Miriam Sadik, the deputy head of the country's largest opposition party, told Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV that President Bashir delivered an emotion-filled speech designed to sway the masses and convince them that he is doing something to resolve the crisis. But she added, the government is still torturing and killing people, and anarchy is spilling into the streets. Hasbullah Saleh, a member of Bashir's ruling party, defended the president, claiming that the economic situation is about to get better. He says that the government is preparing deep economic reforms and that gasoline is available again. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, January 4th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. The Kenyan government yesterday, Thursday, rolled out a new competency-based education system amid resistance from the teachers' union. Speaking in Nairobi, Education Cabinet Secretary Amina Mohamed said the government is ready to supply the necessary learning materials on time in all public schools. As Marie Ojiambo reports, the new education system is being launched at a time when the Teachers Union and the Teachers Service Commission are in talks with the government to avert a looming strike that could see teachers boycott classes.
The new competency-based curriculum, CBC, that will see the replacement of an 844 system has already been rolled out in some schools in the country. Under the 844 system, students go through primary school for 8 years, 4 years in secondary school, and 4 at the tertiary level. It will now be replaced by 2663 system. The curriculum has been divided into two levels, pre-primary 1 for children aged 4 years and pre-primary 2 for children aged 5 years and above. Speaking during the launch, Education Cabinet Secretary Amina Mohamed said that the government will not hold back the rollout and that necessary material will be delivered on time in all public schools countrywide.
Parents actually requested that we do not have them travel on New Year to take their children to school. So we made a modification and agreed that schools would then open not on the 2nd, but on the 3rd. The delivery of the CBC will officially commence countrywide in PP1, PP2, grades 1 to 3.
Since 1985, Kenya has used the 12-year system of learning, which experts claim does not equip most Kenyan graduates with transferable skills. Hence the government's change of the system. Amina says a solid communication plan that will provide regular updates on the progress of the implementation has been developed, and a special desk and call center will be established in order to respond to public inquiries regarding the new curriculum.
I want to state also unequivocally from the outset that the successful implementation of the CBC must be our foremost priority and imperative. I can confirm to you here that His Excellency President Uhuru Kenyatta and all relevant government agencies will accord us the support that we need and that will be necessary to implement this program.
The rollout comes at a time when the Teachers Service Commission and the Teachers Union are not in agreement following the implementation of the teachers' needs, as well as transfer of teachers that the union claim is not in order. Kenya National Union of Teachers Secretary General Wilson Sisyon claims teachers will go on strike if the government does not look into their needs. Sucyon is, however, opposed to the new curriculum on the grounds that the teachers have not been trained for the system.
Even 844 was piloted for 4 years, and CBC, it cannot be piloted in 6 months. We raised these professional alarms and professional steps. Nobody listened. Let us go back to square one and begin discussions by bringing on board all the stakeholders, and I'm willing to see a session of paper discussed in Parliament so that we can roll out a curriculum that is ideal for this country in a suitable manner.
County governments, which are responsible for preschool education, have also opposed the system, stating that they do not have funds as well as teaching staff and learning resources to implement the syllabus. Kenyans are yet to see if the new system will run smoothly in the first phase that has already kicked off. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
South Sudan's military spokesman says anti-government forces carried out what he terms a massacre in a village about 30 miles southwest of the capital, Juba, a claim that could not immediately be verified. General Ruol Kuan accused a rebel group led by General Thomas Cirilo of killing nearly 20 people. Wake Saima Wudu reports from Juba.
Speaking to journalists in Juba, Major General Lulurwai Kwong says fighters with the National Salvation Front, or NAS, killed 19 people last night between Gorom and Wonduruba areas of Jubek State.
It is with the deepest sorrow that the SPDF General Headquarters would like to announce to the people of South Sudan, the region and the international community about the massacre of 19 civilians and wounding of 8 others. The wounded are currently receiving medical treatment at Juba Military Hospital.
Among the dead, we are women, children and elderly people, according to Kwong, who says the attacks were led by NAS General Kenyelo Brown. Kwong insists that NAS fighters led by General Thomas Cirilo are behind the incident and called on the ceasefire monitoring body, CITISAM, to investigate the matter.
Most likely, we are going to join forces with SPLAIO to protect this peace agreement. You know, it's a direct threat, not only to us, but it is a challenge to all the peace partners.
The alleged killings come 2 weeks later after government forces and NAS clashed in Ye River State, with both sides blaming each other for starting the fight. Suba Samuel, a spokesman for the National Salvation Front, denies his group killed civilians and says he was surprised to hear the government's latest allegations.
We know very well that this is not the first time that the regime in Juba has killed people in that area. But the shortest way of doing all this thing is to tarnish the image of National Salvation Front. And we are 100% sure that this thing has been committed by the regime forces here to tarnish the image of National Salvation Front. We are not responsible of all these atrocities. However, we are preparing a press release to deny all this, to condemn it, and provide some evidence for that effect.
Suba claims the area in which the killings allegedly took place is being controlled by heavy armed government forces. South Sudan in Focus was unable to independently verify the allegations in this story. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The announcement of a new album from the man South Africans call Jay-Z is running into problems. Disgraced former president Jacob Zuma is planning to release a live recording of apartheid-era struggle songs. Zuma's detractors are asking why a city in his home region is funding the project. But Zuma's defenders say the 76-year-old politician is a legitimate member of the original anti-apartheid crew, whose voice should be heard. Viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
This is not the Jay-Z you may be thinking of with his inventive beats and Beyonce on his arm. It is this guy. That is former South African President Jacob Zuma giving a performance of the apartheid-era struggle song, Indele Ndela Isihambayo. This road we've embarked on is long. Just 2 months before he was forced to resign in February by his party, the African National Congress. Among the many problems during Zuma's 9-year tenure were multiple serious corruption charges and long simmering scandals. A court ruled in December he must pay the government back for the legal fees he incurred fighting the corruption charges. The album will be financed by the municipality of Etiquini, which includes the coastal city of Durban, the nearest city to Zuma's rural homestead. The municipality's Parks, Recreation and Culture Chief, Tembing Nkosi Nkobo, is helping produce the album.
It's going to be a very beautiful one. I mean, the man is very talented. He can command a group of people as backers. He himself can navigate any song, and it can give a very beautiful tune. So we're looking forward then for him to participate in our project, which is about a research on our liberation history and also preservation of that information and eventually disseminate it to current and future generations.
But local Democratic Alliance representative Zwakele Mwango says the opposition party will do everything it can to stop the album from being made.
We do support preservation of our culture and heritage, and it might be promoted. However, we don't believe that public funds should be abused in supporting Jay-Z doing this album. We have a lot of young and upcoming artists in eThekwini and in South Africa who always try to knock on different doors within government institutions and are not able to get help. Now, the big question is, why Jacob Zuma is a priority?
Nkobo says his department invited singers to perform the songs 3 years ago, but they struggled to capture the song's essence. He says only Zuma, who was among the original anti-apartheid stalwarts along with Nelson Mandela, gives these songs the grit they need. He says Zuma is performing for free.
Jacob Zuma is a former exile where he risked so many things, including his life. He also was in Robben Island for 10 years, and he came back to become one of the leaders, including being the state president in government. So all of these things he was doing out of sacrifice. He knew that he could die because of conditions that they were facing. Now at this point, when we ask him to participate in this project, he agreed he's not going to be getting a cent out of it because he understood it to be, again, his contribution to the heritage of the people of South Africa.
The album is scheduled for release in April and is likely to include one of Zuma's favorite songs, Awuletu Mshini Wami, or Bring Me My Machine Gun. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Somalia's UN envoy is urging the United Nations not to interfere in his country's internal affairs, 2 days after the federal government expelled the UN top official there. Nigeria's Labour Congress says it plans to meet today, Friday, with the Labour and Employment Minister, Senator Chris Ngige, in the capital, Abuja, at the invitation of the minister. The Congress says it wants to hear the minister's reaction to his plan to embark on an indefinite nationwide strike aimed at pressuring the federal government to send the agreed minimum wage bill to the National Assembly for consideration and passage. Supporters of the administration said threats of a nationwide strike are meant to reduce President Muhammadu Buhari's popularity ahead of the February elections. Sudanese security forces fired tear gas at demonstrators in a coastal city on Thursday as thousands of people gathered to demand the resignation of President Omar al-Bashir. 22 trade unions and political parties have called for more protests today, Friday, against Mr. Bashir and his government. And that's it for this Friday, January 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again on Monday for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Anger over rising prices, shortages of bread and fuel, and a cash crisis has incited demonstrations across Sudan and against President Omar al-Bashir. Is Sudan in the precipice of change? An in-depth discussion on the politics of Sudan on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The 2019 VOA calendars are in.
This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture U.S. byways, including beautiful photos of the Big Sur Coast Highway and even the historic Route 66. Tune in to Border Crossings at 1500 Universal to request a free calendar.